Aaron Baker has been covering Afghanistan and Pakistan for Time magazine. She was in Islamabad this week writing about the advance of the Taliban there and joins us this morning, not from Pakistan, but from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. Aaron, welcome to the Big 89 WLS.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
One of the things that Americans didn't know in the 90s was much about the Taliban and its advance throughout Afghanistan and that part of the world, which, of course, led to support for Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda and its terrorist boot camps there. We thought we had beaten the Taliban down after 9/11 when we went into Afghanistan, but I guess we never finished the job there. They are really on the rise. Tell me about what they are doing in Pakistan these days.
Well, the Taliban in Pakistan actually come from a different origin. It's the same idea. Taliban means student. So basically it means a very fundamentalist take on the religion of Islam. So they come from the same things, though. They come from, problems with the central government. When the local population is not affiliated with the central government, a fundamentalist group can come in and take power. And that's what we've been seeing in Pakistan. And that's very similar to what we saw in Afghanistan, in the last decade.
When we heard your reports this week that the Taliban was on the move towards the nation's capital, is there an army of Taliban?
No, it's not that simple. They're not nearly as well organized or equipped as the Afghan Taliban. They're not able to take the country. What it is more like small militia groups that can go in from one kind of barely populated valley to another. They attack the police post, so they take over the central parts of the government. So they take the police post, they'll take the government center, the mayor's house, they'll lock up the mayor in his house, for example, that sort of thing. That's how they take territory.
When you talk about taking over government, we're talking about on a national level a nuclear nation in Pakistan, which has got to be a concern.
Yes, I mean, at this point, they're not remotely near that. And yes, on the other hand, Pakistan is a nuclear-armed nation, and we see a very fragile government in place. I don't see them falling to the Taliban anytime soon, but what I do see them doing is just collapsing over mismanagement, over attacks from all sides. The government and the opposition government, Pakistan is a parliamentary country, they are so busy fighting over politics and who gets in control of the country that very few people in the government are paying attention to the real issue at hand, which is the rise of the Taliban in the countryside and in the ungoverned areas near the Afghan border.
Is this just a power thing for the Taliban, or is this a religious thing?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, what you see is religious justification for thugs. These guys want power. They want income. They can get the people on board by using religion. So it's a combination of all things. Some definitely are idealists. They want to see a return to the fundamentals of Islam. They want to live like the way the Prophet did in the 7th century, all these sort of things. But others, they're along for the ride because it's a great way to get money.
Boy, it scares me when anybody wants to go back to the 7th century and live like that again. You say that they use religion to convince the people. Tell me more about how that works. Is this a matter of trying to invoke Sharia law, the strictest Islamic law throughout the country?
That is part of it. I mean, what you have here is, I mean, you see fundamentalism work this way in around the world. But when you have a religious leader who can say with some justification, you over there, you say you're moderate, you maybe have a glass of whiskey and at dinner, you're not a real Muslim. I'm going to show you what a real Muslim is. Of course, that man who's drinking his whiskey knows that it's against his religion. And he's embarrassed. He feels guilty. So he's going to join, or like at least pretend to join the Taliban to say, I am a good Muslim. So you have that kind of system going on there. It's pressure to become more religious.
So are they getting more and more support from Pakistanis?
You're seeing a combination of fear amongst moderate Pakistanis, terror, actually, terrified that this is something coming so close to their lives. But other people, yeah, I mean, over the last 20, 30 years, we've seen a lot more religiosity coming into Pakistani society. And a lot of that is because during the anti-Soviet war in Afghanistan, the Americans and the Pakistanis and the Saudis, they funded the fundamentalists in order to fight the Soviets. So we're seeing a lot of backlash, and it definitely is hitting us hard in Pakistan.
why can't the Pakistan government do something about it?
That's a very good question, one that those of us who live there ask all the time. The combination of the fact that the government is so inept, largely corrupt, it simply cannot control the state. You also have historical precedents in the area, where, particularly along the Afghan border, where the central government has never had control. It's an old tribal system left over from British colonial era, where you simply don't have taxation, government, roads, schools, anything like that would make a normal society function. So we're starting from scratch up there. And then the rest of the country, it's just ineptitude.
We're talking with Aaron Baker from Time Magazine here on the Big 89 WLS about Pakistan, which is facing more and more trouble from within because of the Taliban. And what is the U.S. able to do about this, and the West in general?
Well, it's a very difficult situation. There's quite a strong sense of anti-Americanism in Pakistan. They see the Americans, I mean, for various reasons, but they see Americans as backing, say, Israel in the Middle East, Americans making friends with arch-enemy in India. So these all things come together to make anti-Americanism come in. So when the Americans come and say, you know, for example, the Kerry Lugar bill, we want to give $1.5 million to to Pakistan to help, you know, modernize and strengthen it. The Pakistanis, a lot of them say, whoa, we don't want your money. We don't want American, you know, involved. Whereas the government needs the money to build up, the army, to build up state institutions. So it's a question of what kind of fingerprints do we put on the money that we can give. I mean, in addition to that, we need help with the military as well.
Aaron, I know you've been covering not just Pakistan, but their neighbors in Afghanistan as well. Is this the same problem that we're facing there as we send more and more troops into Afghanistan?
It's a little bit of a different problem. In fact, I think it was Mullen who said yesterday that you know, he's more worried about Pakistan than Afghanistan. And frankly, it's something I agree with. At least in Afghanistan, we do have the United Nations there. We do have American and coalition forces there to help with the situation. We cannot, as neither the United Nations nor the Americans, actually put boots on the ground in Pakistan. It's a sovereign country that has not asked our assistance. So in that way, it's much more frightening.
And even more frightening if we see the rise of the Taliban continue. And I got to ask you a personal question, because one of the things I know about the Taliban is that when it comes to Sharia law, they are strictest with women, and they have denied rights to women everywhere it has been pressed, and particularly from the youngest of girls who wanted to just go off to school. You know, it's a huge problem. So you live in Pakistan. What's that like for an American woman living in the midst of this?
Well, I'm lucky. I'm an American woman. I am different from a woman. I am considered probably more like a third gender or an honorary male because I'm foreign, because I'm American, I'm backed by money, and I'm educated. The women in Pakistan that are most threatened by Sharia or fundamentalism in general are poor, uneducated. They don't know what their rights are, and they won't stand up for them. So that's the difference. For me, it's fine living here. I'm fortunate. But for them, it's a different situation entirely.
Is the presidency of Asif Ali Zardari threatened?
Yes, it is very much threatened, both internally, because of the government and competition within the government from a rival party. But also, I mean, the economy in Pakistan is failing. We do have the Taliban threat. We have various external threats from, you know, or not external, but we have a separatist movement going on in Baluchistan. There's the threat of India on the border. There's many things that really tend to rock his presidency. And it remains to be seen if he'll be able to retain control.
One last question before you go. I know that in parts of the world where you have groups like this on the rise, a lot of it is because of economic conditions, because of unemployment and poverty, etc. And with the world economy on a downturn over the last year, has that helped the rise of the Taliban there?
Absolutely, absolutely. You can go get a job both in Pakistan and Afghanistan with the Taliban for $10 a day. That's more or less the estimate. You know, when you can do that, then why are you going to be trying to, you know, farm where you make a pittance or anything else? When there's no jobs and the Taliban's offering jobs or the ability to, you know, take over a mayor's house and live in it and take his car, then of course you're going to join the Taliban.
classic gang strategy. Aaron, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks very much.